my Tinder profile at the time, I had this line that said, "Ask, I'm here with my husband, ask me how that works." And 9 out of 10 times when I would match with someone new, they would ask, the first question they would ask me would be, "So how does it work?" And then I have to explain like the mechanics of everything.
Hi, and welcome to Middle Me, the podcast about the coming of age to live your best, most pleasurable life after 40. I'm your host, Anna P. Santos. In this episode, we're talking about open marriages or ethical non-monogamy. Now, a lot of us, because of our background and upbringing, are probably wondering, how can ethical and non-monogamy be in one sentence? That's what we're going to find out in this episode with our guest, Deepa Paul. Deepa was born to and raised in the Philippines by Indian parents. Now she lives in Amsterdam with her husband and her daughter. Deepa is a freelance writer who has written for the likes of Netflix, HBO, and NBC Universal. Deepa is also the author of a memoir called Ask Me How It Works, Frequently Asked Questions About My Open Marriage. And that's exactly what Deepa is going to tell us in this episode. How does opening up your relationship to be non-monogamous actually work?
I love having these conversations with you, and now I'm so happy to share it with our listeners. You know, just the other day, I came across this the Instagram post of Sex with Emily, Dr. Emily. And she said that she had to rewrite it to add a section on non-monogamy, because she's been getting the same questions over and over, right? About penis size, how to deal with infidelity. But now more and more people are talking and asking about open relationships and open marriages.
More women, I hope. Okay, yeah.
Actually, I didn't get to ask because it was in her Instagram post, but that is an interesting point of view, diba? Sino ang nag-open ng open relationship?
Very timely.
And I think that's a great way to jump into, right into that first question. Deepa, I know you're working on a book about your open marriage, and it's based on the questions that you're frequently asked.
Yeah, I'd love to tell you more about that. It's the book is called Ask Me How It Works. So basically, this is my pandemic project, you know, where while people were binging on Tiger King and baking sourdough bread, I decided to write down something that was based on an essay. So I've been in an open marriage for 7 years. So I've been married 15 years. Wow. And now it's open for 7. And at that point, I was dating around a lot, and I would often get the same questions again and again from people I was dating. And on my Tinder profile at the time, I had this line that said, I'm here with my husband, ask me how that works. And 9 out of 10 times when I would match with someone new, they would ask, the first question they would ask me would be, so how does it work? And then I have to explain like the mechanics of everything. And I found that over time, people had to basically have the same questions over and over again. So I was like, you know what? I just want to write all this down, and then maybe someday I'll just forward them a link. But during the pandemic, that essay grew into a book. And it turns out that I have a lot to say about the experiences I've had over the last 7 years. And now it's 96,000 words and 14 chapters. So yeah, that's what the book is about.
I think we should maybe step back a little bit and go into, what do we mean by an open relationship? I know it's a lot more in the mainstream now and all of that, but is it defined by who's in the relationship, or what are the basics of an open relationship?
Okay, so an open relationship would fall under like the umbrella term of non-monogamy. So non-monogamy is like the simplest way to define it is anything that is not in the, you know, the standard kind of traditional, conventional, sexually and emotionally exclusive structure of monogamy. And under non-monogamy, it's like, it's a spectrum. So you can, there are people who are, for example, not monogamish,
Done Savage.
Monogamous people who have like that one night a year where they don't ask, don't tell, and you know, that's kind of like their agreement. There are people who also do swinging, which is just, you know, it's purely physical. You swap partners with other couples, and that's like a whole lifestyle on its own. But an open relationship, and like the way I've been practicing it, an open marriage, is we started out by removing sexual exclusivity from our commitment. So we've been married and we agreed that we could have casual, like sort of casual, yeah, connections with other people. And this evolved into something else, you know, over the years. And now it's another concept called polyamory, where it's defined as the ability to have, you know, to love many people on many different levels. And where I am now is I have a husband of 15 years and a boyfriend of 3 years. And I'm also a mom, by the way. So that's another relationship. But yeah, an open relationship is basically, it's characterized by you're quite emotionally, and I guess in many other ways, you know, like financially, structurally kind of committed to each other.
Right.
But you have space for casual connections. And that's all within each other's knowledge and consent.
I have so many questions, Deepa. So many questions just from what you said. I think, but the first question that keeps on popping up in my mind is, where do you find the time to schedule all of this? And oh, ooh, my gosh.
Where do I find the time? Okay, the first thing I realized is, you know, one of my best friends from back home in Manila asked me this. So I was telling her about my typical day where, like, I drop my kid off at school, go to my own, you know, place of work. I have a studio that I share with other creatives. I work, come back home, pick her up, and then have dinner with my family, and then go on a date or like go clubbing, and then maybe go to like another date after. And she was like, alam mo, hindi yan pwede sa Maynila. Kasi tatlong, like 3 hours in the car.
Oh my God.
Like going somewhere. It just, like, first of all, not having to deal with traffic just frees up so much of my time and energy. Like all of my whole life in Amsterdam is a cyclic culture, as you know.
Yeah.
Everything in my life is organized within like a 10 to 15 bike ride from my front door.
Yes.
So that really has freed up a lot of my time and energy. And I have to say, like, what I have with my husband is he's my life partner. And in polyamorous jargon, we call it a nesting partner. So this is the person I live my everyday life with.
Okay.
Our lives are anchored to each other. This is the priority above all other connections. And so we live together with our daughter. And once a week, I sleep over at my boyfriend's house. So that's agreed. Yeah, agreed, Nayan. Okay. And it's already been, I guess, for like about 2 years maybe that I've been staying over at my boyfriend's every week. So that's kind of the division of time. And yeah, energy-wise, I would say, like, most of the time, you know, being able to pursue other connections and have interests outside of being a wife and mom gives me a lot of energy. So it takes a lot of energy out of me, but it is something that I get a lot of energy from.
You know, when you were talking, I remembered this, I don't know, it's probably a meme now, right? That you should have a man who loves you, a man who you love, a man who makes you feel, you know, that kind of list.
Yeah,
and then the last thing says, and make sure that they don't know each other. Or they never meet, something like that. But I think in your case, that's not the case.
No, they know each other. Well, I'm really lucky to have, you know, like all of those men are kind of like both men. Both men in my life, that they know each other. They're not required to be friends.
Okay.
But we've definitely gotten to a point where they can be comfortably around each other. You know, especially since I've been doing a lot of events for my book over the past year. So I've been sharing excerpts, doing live readings, and they're kind of like, they both want to be there as like Team Deepa.
Oh.
So sabi ko, oh, ito na, mapipilitan na sila. Mapipilitan na sila magkasama. So they have to be, yeah, and they just, you know, both show up. And the first time I did show up at an event where I was a speaker speaking on polyamory and I had both of them with me, I felt a bit like, wow, ako ba to? Is this me? Like, I'm showing up here with both my the men in my life. And it's kind of like, and I was also showing up with a really good gay friend of mine. He was sitting in between the two of them in the audience. So, you know, someone in the audience was like, oh, like, are your partners here? And I was like, yes, there's my husband and there's my boyfriend. And then the person in the audience went to my gay friend, what about that one? I was like, oh, no, that's not one of mine.
Okay, okay, this is my other question. You talked about having casual connections or connections with others.
Mm-hmm.
How do you manage the casual connections with others? Meaning, do you get attached sometimes, or is there no attachment? How do you deal with that?
It's been a process for me. So when I first started out on this path, mm-hmm. My husband and I had agreed to just have casual connections. So it was very clear. We weren't looking for emotional attachments with anyone. Mm-hmm. We also had very specific boundaries. Like, we still call them mm-hmm. rules, but I think they're more of boundaries. Like, I'm not comfortable with this if you do it. Mm-hmm. And then we would respect, you know, we had agreements. So among the agreements were like, no sleeping over at someone else's house. Like, I would always crawl home regardless of the time. You know, it would be 6 a.m. and the birds started chirping and I'm like, okay, it's time for me to go. And I would be home before my daughter woke up and, you know, for the day or had breakfast. Because that felt like it was too intimate to share with someone at the time. I think this was in the first 4 years of our open marriage was like this. And there was also stuff like, you know, we also had rules around not shit where you eat. So don't sleep with coworkers or people from your place of work.
Mm-hmm. Or common friends.
Or common friends. Mm. Yeah, friends is just like big mess. Don't go there.
Yeah.
So I was really forced to kind of put myself out there on dating apps and stuff like that. And in the beginning, I have to say, I went through my slut era where it was just like, oh my gosh, all of the options are open to me. Like, you know, and I did go out with a lot of people because I could.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then you have like, it sounds really like liberating and exciting, but to be honest, and anyone who's dating in the modern age knows this, there are also like lots of mediocre experiences.
Yep.
And bad ones. And they're all mixed in together. And you have to go through quite a lot to get to the good ones. So it took a while for me to... I was very good about my boundaries. Like, because I already opened with, this is how it works. You know, I don't do this. I don't do this. I'm a mom. So I'm only going to... Like, I'm not going to sleep over. I'm not going to be, like, the person you can call all the time. I set kind of those boundaries with people I met early in the beginning. Early at this, you know, in early stages. And for the most part, men were quite happy with that. They were like, great, you know, you're not never going to get attached. There's no drama. Your emotional needs are taken care of. And I was like, okay, cool. It's all fine.
Yeah.
And then over, like, you know, over time, I started seeing that treating people very transactionally meant that I was also setting myself up to be treated transactionally. And it didn't feel good. So, you know, I've had my share of bad experiences with dating.
Yeah.
And after a while, I was like, I just want to be around people who treat me in a more human way, you know, like kinder. I want to be more of myself because I think I'm quite a warm and caring and fun person.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I can't be tender to someone, you know, after sex. Like, I really have to get out of there and, you know, like, put on my clothes right after and leave. And I can't talk to them. And I can't like them so much. And I can't ask them about their interests. It just started to feel strange. So that's when I started being more selective about my connections. And I didn't have as many.
Yeah.
Like, I had this sort of, like, initial burst of a lot of casual connections. And then after a while, I was like, no, these are the kinds of people I like. These are the kinds of people I want to spend my energy on. Right. And who give me good energy back. But that process took years, you know, and obviously I made a lot of mistakes along
but
the way.
But Deepa, did you feel when I heard you saying that I felt like I couldn't be myself, I felt like I couldn't get to know them, was that a function of this is my built-in self-defense mechanism so I don't get too attached to you because this is just a casual hookup?
Yeah, it was really a function of proving to my husband that I was ready to protect our relationship at all costs. Because he went into this with reservations. He was like, how do I know? You know, in so many words. I mean, it came out over a lot of conversations, but he was basically concerned that I'm dating so many people, and I really have, like, I have no type, you know, like, I dated a whole range of people. and he's like, and he was kind of scared, like, how do I know you're not just auditioning for my eventual replacement?
Oh.
And I said, like, I'm not, and this is for me to, like, explore my sexuality and myself, and I will prove to you that our marriage is the priority over everything else. So that meant telling people upfront, hey, I'm happily married, you know, I'm adventuring and I'm happily married, and this is what I will and won't go into.
Okay.
Yeah, so it wasn't so much of a protection mechanism for me, but
okay,
being protective of my relationship with my husband.
But it's interesting that you mentioned that it was your husband who said, how am I going to know that you're not just auditioning someone else for my replacement and I'm going to be understudy, or I'm going to be eased out of this play that is our life story? Usually it's the guy who is with multiple partners, casual relationships. Hindi ba ganyan?
I think this is something I've seen kind of around the polyamorous community, or around people who are trying various forms of non-monogamy. It's easier for women to find partners, especially if you're kind of advertising yourself as a, like, no strings attached, you know, casual fun partner. There are more guys on dating apps than women, and women will always have the upper hand. So he was having a really hard time on dating apps because he would match with women and then they would start talking and he'd be like, oh, by the way, have you seen in my profile that I'm married? And then the women would just freak out, you know. And also a lot of women were relationship minded.
Yeah.
People, you know, women would say to him, like, what are you doing on Tinder? You know, there's we would laugh about this one particular match said to him, Why do you still want McDonald's when you have fine dining at home every night? And I was like, girl, you're not McDonald's, you know? But it's like also like, I can't just have fine dining every day, you know? Sometimes you also want a pizza, right?
Or a so Big Mac. Really,
he didn't anticipate how hard it is actually for men to find casual partners.
Wow.
On the other hand, like, a woman who is seen as liberated, independent, sexually, you know, like, sexually expressive, and will not get attached is, you know, it's really I felt like a hot commodity at the time. And I did get to the stage where I was like, I was coming with my own insecurities and issues, coming as a, you know, a mom and like a plus sized woman from the Philippines, where everyone has to be like, you know, forever youthful and petite. And then I was like, oh, you know, I don't think I'm going to find anything here. And then at some point I realized, you know what, if I really wanted to, I could fill up every night of the week with someone new from a dating app. But of course I didn't want to.
Yeah.
But it was just shocking for me how easy it is for women, especially when you know what you want and you're clear about your boundaries. There's something very appealing about that. So yeah, he didn't anticipate it. And neither did I.
We've been listening to Deepa Paul give us the lowdown on how open relationships and the spectrum of non-monogamy can work. Sort of like the mechanics of the whole thing, you know? But we also talked about managing feelings and not becoming too attached. Coming up next, I ask Deepa to go deeper into the more personal side of non-monogamy and give us a peek into her own feelings. Here's Deepa talking about the good and not so good stuff she found out about herself, plus her adventure with a really hot boxer dude. Deepa also answers the most burning question, well, at least for me, how do you love two men at the same time? But when you say that there was something really appealing about finding out all your options and mm-hmm. like being at a buffet, right?
Yes, a buffet. Smorgasbord.
And where you can have something different every night.
Yeah.
How did that feel for you in terms of knowing your sexual self? And any contradictions between what we were taught or made to learn when we were growing up?
I think the background, sort of like my upbringing in the Philippines is, you know, went to a Catholic school, was really raised to be a good girl. And I was, like, I got the good grades.
Yeah.
You know, I was in a choir for 12 years. I was the president of my choir. And, like, it was all about being a certain kind of girl. Yeah. And in that image, desire is not really a part of it. Like, you're not supposed to be seen as someone with sexual desires or curiosities. And I think I, you know, to be the good girl, I always kept that curiosity hidden. I think I was already very aware of sexuality at a young age, but I was like, oh wait, this is bad, you know, like women who like sex are bad, women who are curious about sex are bad. So in being a good girl, I kept that under wraps for a really long time, for most of my life. And you know, now that I suddenly could explore, I felt like a part of me that had always been buried was coming alive.
Wow.
Like all of the things I wanted to find out that I was curious about weren't bad anymore. And if, like, I wanted to try something, actually it wasn't so much that I wanted to try stuff. I was, you know, I started dating people and then I would be like, so what are you into? And then they would be like, oh yeah, well, I'm really into this. You want to try that? And I'd be like, yeah, why not? You know, I was down for everything, although I had boundaries. I had the hard lines as well. I felt like, oh, there's so many ways that people can have sex and enjoy pleasure. Mm-hmm. And I only know, like, you know, 10% of it. Mm. And I want to find out what else is there. So I would also kind of became this girl that wasn't very judgmental of men's fantasies and desires.
Okay.
I got some really bizarre ones. And then I would just be like, nah, that's not for me. You know, but then I hope you find someone who's into that, you know, but that's not going to be me this time. And I think having that sort of buffet of options, mm-hmm. It made me feel really alive. Like, oh, I can try this, I can try this, I can, you know, I can discover something new about myself today, and something new about myself tomorrow. A lot of it was not so much, I think that was the most liberating part. It wasn't so much as pleasing the partners I had. It was about learning something new about myself with each new person.
Can you bring me back to one event once through a story? Like, what was something that you learned about yourself through this journey of yours, or trying out different partners?
Where do I start? With different partners, let's see. I think maybe around two or three years into my open marriage journey, I met someone who was really fantastically, like, super mega attractive on paper. I mean, in person, it, you know, he was hot. He was a boxer. Oh. He was polyamorous. He had two girlfriends. And he seemed really, really into me, which I couldn't believe, you know. And then on our first date, we just talked for 6 hours. And I was like, wow, there's really something here. And I was super infatuated with this guy. But then I also sensed, like, there was some hesitation on his part. Like, mm-hmm. on our first date, you know, I was like, hey, this is going really well, but, you know, you haven't kissed me. I was confident.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he did. But then before he did, there was just, like, this moment of hesitation. And then I was like, what's that? But he did it anyway. We had a great, you know, we kissed. And then we saw each other for a few months. But suddenly I realized my instinct, like, notice, oh, you know, hold on, there was a moment of hesitation there. There's something here that's not quite what it should be. But I was very happy to continue. And then it kept happening again, like in other small moments.
This hesitation.
And then at some point, it was just something like this, you know, like I'm so there. It's a huge, first of all, it's a huge rush when someone really, really hot, it's super into you.
Yeah.
But then I realized that my instinct was becoming stronger. And I was like, you know, if there's this little bit of hesitation, it should be something that we talk about, or you know, why am I here? You know, what am I chasing here? And we finally went to a festival together. And at the end of the evening, you know, I was sitting on his lap. And then he just said, I have something to tell you. And I was like, this is it. This is what he's going to say. This is not going to happen. And so he said, I don't have the urgency to keep seeing you. It was a long distance thing as well. I don't have the urgency to keep seeing you in a like romantic or sexual way, but I really like you. And I was like, that's the thing I sensed like right before our first kiss. And what that really, and I, instead of being let down or like my ego being crushed by this rejection, I was super happy that what we had, our connection just revealed itself for what it really was. And I felt like, oh, this is like a moment of recognition. And I was super happy. We're still really good friends. And then what that taught me about myself was that I can trust my instincts.
Okay.
That's one. Yeah. And that my ego isn't fragile. Much of our existence, I think, as women.
Yeah.
Is about looking pleasing to other people, being attractive to men, dress for men, put on the red lipstick and the high heels to look sexy for men. And I realized, you know, when he sort of let me down in that way, I had the opposite feeling. I had this feeling of excitement. I'm like, oh my God, now we're really getting to like the good stuff. This is really what it's supposed to be. And I don't, like my ego and my self-image is not dependent on the super hot guy constantly liking you. And now I have this amazing friendship that's lasted like 6 years, 7 years now. Yeah, 6 years.
Did you feel that this is how a sincere emotional friendship with a guy can feel like? An honest-to-goodness friendship with a guy, you know? Not a lot of us have that feeling where we can be friends with other men, like genuine friends. There's always this part that comes up.
I think particularly like if you're married or if you are in a committed relationship with another man, I think a lot of our culture tells us, you know, that other close friendships should be avoided, right? Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to have other friends from the opposite, you know, from the opposite gender. Because it's a bit infantilizing in a way. Na parang you can't, hindi nyo kaya. Like there'll be too much temptation and you won't know, you know, how to handle it and it'll all end in disaster. But I think if you really, this has taught me that if you have honest friendships if you have honest friendships and you can talk about anything, not all friendships with men, you know, as a woman, have to end in you getting into bed together. You can have absolutely fulfilling platonic relationships based around shared interests, based around, you know, common passions. And my male friendships that I've gotten out of dating actually have really, really enriched my life. And I would never have met some of these people if I hadn't been on dating apps.
Oh. So, yeah. So you can
and
also
somehow,
find friends.
Like, I feel like my male friends understand the part of me that needs to be wild.
In a
they
way
have
that
less
other
boundaries
women
or their time so they can go out more often and like, you know, when I'm kind of like my casual connection self, they understand it. But my women friends struggle with that.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you, your male friends understand you more.
Yeah. In some ways. And of course there, you know, there's gonna be things that they'll never understand, like my male friends will never understand like the compartmentalizing that needs to happen in my head as a mom,
right?
And the sort of like very visceral like response that I have to putting my daughter first and taking care of her first. And then what I get, like, I mean, I enjoy a lot of freedom on my own, but it's kind of leftover time, you know, leftover time and energy after being a mom and a wife first.
How do you love two men at the same time?
Very differently. When I talk about it to people, I've often used the analogy of having children.
Okay.
And this is not because they're like kids, but, you know, you're a mom.
Yeah.
And when you have your first child, you know that first child intimately, like, you know everything about that child. And then let's say you decide to have a second one. No one ever tells you, hey, you have to get rid of the first one because the second one is here. You're not going to have enough time, enough energy, enough love, you know. So, kalimutan mo na yung first. Forget about the first one. No one ever says that about kids. But in romantic relationships, they're like, oh, well, you can't, you know, you're just being a half-assed partner to your second one because of the first one. And I'm like, no, actually, there's, you know, you will love your first and your second child in very different ways because they're very different people.
Yeah.
So for my husband and my boyfriend, it's that. It's a very, very different love because they're such different individuals. I share, like with my husband, I share the lifelong project of parenthood, which is all of the joys and struggles and fulfillment and ups and downs of having our daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Only he and I will ever know what that feels like.
Right.
And we have a future. Like, we dream a lot about the future. We have things that we want to do together, that we've wanted to do together since we were college sweethearts. Part of it is like living our dream of living here in Europe. You know, that's, it's huge when a dream comes true.
Yes.
And you've made it happen together. So we have our dreams, we have our future, we have our child. With my boyfriend, we have, we are very strong creative partners. So
okay.
He is a freelance creative like myself. He's an artist, actually much more of an artist than I am. And he understands the creative struggle, the self-doubt. You know, we call each other for like motivation. We don't do it anymore, but we used to do Monday motivation on first thing Monday morning. He'd call me and be like, so what are you up to today? You know, what's on this week? And then I'd be like, okay, so what's up for you? And we make a lot of stuff together. So he's a photographer and we go into the studio and we play. Like, when I have ideas, they're only ideas because I'm a writer. I can't really make anything physical. So I tell him, and then he goes and builds something or shoots something or designs something. And then we just make it happen. And that's something I don't have with my husband that I've never seen as a lack. But now that I have it, I'm like, whoa, this is what this makes possible. So I think if you have very different things that anchor each relationship, you appreciate each person for their uniqueness. And love is not a pie. Now, if you take away one portion for someone, if you divide it, there's less for someone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
it just doesn't work that way. But there are finite resources like time, attention, and energy.
Energy, yeah.
And that's what I have to manage.
So what would your tips be for people who are thinking about having an open relationship, an open marriage, and who are probably thinking, how do you do it? You know, what would your five tips be?
I think the first thing is to ask yourself, why do I want an open relationship? Be aware of the needs that you want to serve. For me, the needs that I was serving at the time that this came about were my needs for sexual variety and exploration.
Mm-hmm.
Try to fulfill those needs in the relationship first, before proposing a different structure. I think you have to also really be aware that if you are initiating this conversation, it could be very confronting and feels very unsafe and unsettling for the other person. So be sure that you're communicating what you need, but you're also asking them, hey, what do you need from me to make this feel more safe? Do we need to go at it slower? Do we need to read? Do we need to talk to other people? Always go at the pace of the slowest person. And, you know, I think my biggest piece of advice is it actually takes a strong relationship to start an open marriage, because it is very unsettling in the beginning. The first couple of years were roller coaster years. But if we didn't have the commitment of like, hey, you know, we really are life partners and we don't want to change anything about that, I don't know if we would have made it. So if you're looking for an open relationship or an open marriage setup to fix foundational and structural issues in your relationship, it will only expose them. It will only exacerbate them. So work on yourself, work on your relationship first. And we're so lucky that we have so many resources now. You know, if you Google these terms, you'll come up with books and podcasts. When my husband and I downloaded Tinder, you know, that night 7 years ago, we didn't even know what an open marriage was. We were just like, hey, let's just try this and see. We went into it like completely blind, and all we really had was each other. So I guess that would be kind of the first, you know, pieces of advice I'd give to someone. Become very aware of your needs. Become very aware of whether they're being served in your existing relationship or not. And what can you do? What can you create together to serve those needs first? And then you look outside. Be very clear about what you are willing to do, what you're willing to see from your partner, and be aware that it's not going to be easy and you're going to make mistakes. So you have to be forgiving of yourselves and each other, of yourself and each other.
But that's such a huge ask. Like, I think when I was listening to you, that's revolutionary, quote unquote, for me, that this is something that you try when you're both really secure and your relationship is stable. And that's I think it tells a lot that, okay, you both know that this isn't going to, you're going to go back to each other.
Mm-hmm.
There's a different sense of security of that, but that's so kind of hard to know, right?
Even if we are married, right? 10 years before we even tried, you know, and I think the thing about being in an open marriage, it really exposes a lot of your fears about yourself and about your relationship in the world. It is a whole new level of intimacy that we hadn't even touched in the 10 years that we had been together. And I can safely say, like, my husband knows everything about me. Like, we have no secrets. He knows the worst of me. He knows the best of me. And I know the same about him. But we never would have gone in this direction, so deeply, I think, if we hadn't pursued this. So, yeah, it's just a whole new level of intimacy. Just the amount of talking you need to do when you're confronted by things like jealousy will really reveal things about each other. So be prepared to see a lot. But I think the more I've seen of my husband, you know, the more I love him. And I know that I can't find anyone like this. And it's just like, it's for me, it's just a no-brainer that this is really how, you know, my lifetime kind of partner. And I'm so glad that I'm able to have other fun things and wonderful connections on top of what is already a fulfilling and, you know, loving marriage.
Do you feel that the different parts of you, Deepa, are like being appreciated and seen with this kind of setup?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I feel, in particular, especially since I started writing the book, having my boyfriend in my life has been a huge creative support. Mm. Like, he really, really gets it. Like, I can talk to my husband, and I do, talk to him about my book. But from the experience of someone else who's really creative and has undergone that struggle, I just feel really seen as a creative on that level. And I also feel like I'm able to explore parts of my identity that are not just about being a mom and a wife.
Mm-hmm.
One day my daughter is going to grow up. We live in Europe, so she's going to move out. She was actually asking us the other day. She's like, Mama, is it true when I'm 18, I have to leave the house? And I was like, no, it doesn't work like that. I'm not going to be like a full-on mom forever.
Yeah.
At some point, my relationship with my husband will also change because we've agreed to be in this for life. So what can I build my identity on other than being a wife and a mom? And I'm glad that I'm able to discover that as it changes throughout my life. By, you know, putting myself in different situations with different people and seeing how I respond. That's my preferred method of growth. Like, put yourself somewhere unfamiliar and see how you can stretch and expand to fill that space.
That's super brave,
maybe,
huh?
Yeah, I know. I think my husband is just like, could you like do, you know, just like not be like that all the time?
That was part one of our episode on open relationships and ethical non-monogamy with freelance writer Deepa Paul. I love how Deepa was so open and honest about her life with her husband, daughter, and boyfriend. How opening her marriage made her relationship with her husband more intimate. And how honoring different parts of her outside of being a wife, mother, and girlfriend has fulfilled her. Maybe you're thinking about opening your relationship to non-monogamy. Or maybe you're thinking that your monogamous relationship is exactly the way it should be. Or maybe you're not even in a relationship, but want to explore what it's like to be part of someone else's relationship. Open, I hope. Whichever way you decide to explore or stay where you are, I hope this episode helped in getting to know other healthy expressions of desire and other ways of loving and being loved. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Middle Me. I hope that you'll continue to think of Middle Me as your safe space where you can ask questions, explore, and live your most pleasurable life after 40. I'm Anna P. Santos. You can find Middle Me wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Hit that subscribe button and drop a comment or two. We'd love to hear from you. Actually, dropping a 5-star review would be even better. Till our next episode.